Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor. I am joined today by Sports Illustrated senior writer. He is no longer the NBA media's most eligible bachelor. Please welcome Chris Mannix to the show. Mannix, how's it going?
It is nice to be back on the platform that I built as the as the founder of Open Floor many, many years ago. It is nice to be back. It's like coming home to roost.
Right. No, I was gonna say it was your Open Floor debut, but then I fact-checked myself and realized that was incorrect. Chris, you have many jobs, and the one that I'm most jealous of is that you get to do for DAZN, like, in-ring interviews after a big fight. That was, for years, I wanted that job, just to interview boxers right after a fight. I think it's thrilling. What's the craziest thing that's ever happened to you in the ring after a fight?
Probably, it was several years ago, and Tyson Fury, who is the heavyweight champion, he was in New York to face Steve Cunningham. And, you know, Fury won that fight by knockout, and you know, in the post-fight interview, he wrestled the microphone away from me and started singing like some Aerosmith song to the Madison Square Garden crowd, which, you know, is goofy enough in and of itself. But the bigger problem was that was a fight that was airing on main network NBC, and they've got hard outs. So, like, I am kind of, I wouldn't say trying to get the mic back, but I'm sort of looking at his handlers being like, hey, can we get this from him? And they're looking at me like, what do you want us to do? He's 6'9", 280 pounds. Like, there's no getting the microphone away from him. So I remember getting a phone call from Sam Flood, who runs NBC Sports still to this day. You know, great guy. And he said to me, Chris, treat the microphone like you would treat your child. And I've always remembered that. And to this day, no one has been able to pull the microphone away from me since.
Yeah, I also would not be trying to get into a fight with Tyson Fury back for that microphone. I just have to ask for all my Love Island fans out there, are we going to get the Tommy Fury? Is it Jake Paul or Logan Paul? Which one of them is the boxer? Are we going to get that fight?
Jake Paul, Tommy Fury seems very likely for the end of February. Tommy is a little unpredictable. He's backed out twice of Jake Paul fights, but this is a fight that's either going to take place in the Middle East or in the UK. So I think it's probably 85% that we get Tommy Fury versus Jake Paul in the next couple of months.
All right, there we go. I appreciate it. And Open Floor fans, please be prepared for the return of the Love Island Minute. The season's already going on in the UK. Should be hitting the US pretty soon. But Chris, we got a lot of basketball things to get to today. I want to touch on some of the big things that happened in the NBA on a pretty action-packed Wednesday night of basketball. I got to say, it was a lot of fun watching all these games. I want to start with kind of the two rivalry matchups. We got rivalry week going on, and we'll start with Nets Sixers. This was a really good game, even without Kevin Durant. A lot of fun. There was one stretch where Ben Simmons, it was genuinely the most aggressive offense I've seen him play in literally years. Four or five drives to the hoop on four or five possessions in a row, attacking Montrezl Harrell. I couldn't believe what I was watching. The Sixers end up winning this game. Simmons does not play the last kind of 6 minutes of the fourth quarter. You can still see some of the issues of them playing him and Nick Claxton together. And Claxton's been fantastic this season. It was a good win for Philly. And, you know, I don't want to read too much into one regular season game, but I did think it was interesting because we got the microcosm of the whole Simmons experience. A little passive in the first half. You see this back and forth with Embiid, which seems to wake him up a little bit, but then he doesn't play the fourth. You know, the trade deadline's coming up. I don't think there's really any buzz around Simmons, but what do you kind of think the Nets' long-term plan with him should be? Because I think we've seen glimpses of him be that distributor, defender, aggressive guy this season and other stretches where he's just not doing anything. What do you kind of think their long-term plan is for him?
Well, you'd like to them to be able to bottle what happened in the third quarter on Wednesday night. I mean, he came out of the locker room at halftime and looked like the Ben Simmons we saw 2 or 3 years ago and not the kind of broken version we've seen over the last couple of years. I don't think that's possible. I don't think you can. And that's, and Jacque Vaughn knew it. That's why I didn't play Simmons down the stretch in the fourth quarter, because as you alluded to, you simply can't play Claxton and Simmons together in crunch time minutes. They're both non-free throw shooters. They're both non-scorers, though Claxton has kind of become what the Nets hoped Simmons would be in terms of going to the basket and scoring at the rim. But it's pretty untenable to play them together down the stretch. I don't think their long-term plan is to move him. I just think they're going to try to keep, you know, incrementally trying to revive him. You know, maybe it doesn't happen this year. It is his first full year back, you know, coming off that injury and all the issues he had in Philadelphia. But I think they'll give it, you know, a couple of years to see if, you know, a full off season, maybe with a new shooting coach, you know, more confidence that gets him back to being the Ben Simmons of old. I mean, it's only a few years ago that he was an all NBA talent, you know, considered, you know, one of the top defensive players in the NBA. He's still in his mid-20s. Like, that player is still there. And I think the Nets are going to be, my understanding is the Nets are going to be as patient as they possibly can to try to bring that out of him, be it this year or in the years to come.
Yeah, that's very interesting, and I do wonder how much of that has to do with the fact that he was involved in such a high-profile trade. He's not someone that you can just very easily move on from and move him for a couple role players because of the significance of that Harden trade for the franchise and kind of how charged that time was for the team emotionally. I think that if there's a big positive to take away from that game for Brooklyn is, you know, it was the first time Simmons and Embiid were going at each other, and they were going at each other. I mean, Simmons, they were switching Harden, Embiid pick and rolls. Claxton was picking up Harden. Simmons was switching onto Embiid. I thought he held his own multiple times against Embiid. And Embiid, he's not afraid to talk. He's not afraid to get physical. And I thought the fact that Simmons responded to that, even though, again, there were times he'd catch the ball in the paint, not even look at the hoop, that seemed to wake him up a little bit as opposed to, you know, push him into a corner, which, again, I'm not going to sit here and play psychologist, but we've seen him on multiple occasions this year. I don't know if check out is the right phrase, but just kind of be so passive. And I think the fact that the rivalry or whatever it was with Embiid kind of woke him up a little bit was really promising to me. And you, like you said, can they bottle it? I'm not sure. It's interesting to me, though, that you said they're going to take their time with this, if only because, you know, the KD thing worked itself out over the summer. There was never going to be a realistic trade for them. But if I'm Sean Marks, especially considering the relationship with Durant, how many things seem to pop up in Brooklyn, I don't know that I'd be willing to be as patient as he is. Especially because with Durant this year, they look every bit of a championship contender. I think, you know, Boston has separated itself, but I think outside of Boston, there's no clear-cut number two, and I think Brooklyn can certainly be that team when Durant is healthy. That doesn't it surprise? Doesn't it surprise you a bit that they're willing to be patient? I mean, if you think
only because what are they going to do? Like, there's no market for him right now. Like, he's a non-shooting guy on a max contract. Like, it's I don't know who's lining up to go and get him. I mean, the kind of team that, you know, Ben Simmons would need to go to. I mean, like Golden State, you know, I guess kind of jumps to mind because of all the shooters they have out there. But, you know, you'd not be just taking on Ben Simmons and his contract. You'd be taking on whatever kind of baggage he has going on right now that's preventing him from getting back to that level. If he was playing at an all-NBA level and the Nets decided, look, we like Claxton a lot. We can't play them together. Let's try to get dollar-for-dollar value back in return. That I could understand, but there isn't a market for it right now. I don't know where you would trade him that you would get anything of value back right now. It's just not on the table at the moment.
Where do you land on Joel Embiid's suck it celebration? Are you pro, against, nonplussed?
I mean, I feel the same way about that as I do like the critics of Steph Curry getting ejected the other night for throwing his mouthpiece. Like, the NBA lays it out pretty clear that you know Joel Embiid, you're going to get fined for doing that. Just like the Sam Cassell, you know, Pedro Serrano dance. Yeah, like, yeah, you know, yeah, they yeah. You can't do that. You're going to get dinged pretty significantly for that. Same thing with Steph Curry. Like, you know, what did I read? Steph Curry's three ejections have been related to all throwing the mouthpiece. Related. Like, should we know by now at this point? We can call it goofy, and he certainly wasn't throwing it at the referee, but it, you know, the NBA officials, like, they give, like, seminars on this stuff. Like, they tell players, you know, pretty clear, you can't throw things into the crowd. Like, because, you know, what happens if it's not a mouthpiece and somebody gets hit? Like, I'm not trying to be a wet blanket here, but it's like, stop, you know, you should know better. Stop doing that. And Embiid, you know, I was a DX fan growing up, too.
There we go, of course.
I know what he was doing, but, like, he's going to get dinged for that as well, because the NBA is not... will not look favorably on guys that are directing people to their crotch area during celebrations.
I just want to say I love it. I love that he's willing to eat the fine. I think it's very funny. Also a big DX fan growing up. I'm glad someone's carrying on the legacy. I keep mentioning this every week. I know that you're a loyal listener to the podcast, Chris, but we don't talk about the Sixers enough, and we're not going to get too deep into them, I think, today. But they've had a crazy 10-day stretch of West Coast trip. They got a bunch of big wins. They get this win against the Nets. They're starting to look like the team we all thought they could be after the Harden trade. Do you think the Celtics have Al Horford, who's probably, I think, the best defender of Joel Embiid in the NBA, at least considering he's the best guy who can defend Embiid and also not kill you offensively. Like, it's very hard to find the players who you can put on Embiid that also are not just ruining your offense because you need bulk down
there. Al Horford is so good at defending Embiid that the Sixers gave him a four-year deal not to defend Embiid anymore.
Right. But do you think Boston... I don't think Boston's afraid of anyone, but who do you think Boston sees as maybe their biggest competition in the East?
Probably Milwaukee still, you know, because the memory of last year's conference semifinals is still fresh. No Chris Middleton in that series. They still needed a miraculous Tatum performance in Game 6 and a winning Game 7 to advance. So they know how tough the Bucks are. The Bucks are the same team. You know, if Middleton, who's now finally back on the floor, if he can stay there, they're probably the most formidable opponent. I mean, the Sixers are tough, but to your point, you know, the Celtics have Horford. They have Robert Williams. They still have Luke Kornet, who I constantly want to call Tyler Zeller. Like, they've got, you know, they've got some depth there. They're still on the lookout too before the deadline for one more body, presumably because of the big teams they're going to have to face in the postseason. So they could add somebody else to that mix. So and you look at the backcourt too. I mean, Maxey, Harden, they're great, but the Celtics, they've got Marcus Smart, they've got Jaylen Brown, they've got Derek White. They have got defenders that they can throw at these guys. So I don't think Philadelphia makes them as nervous as maybe Milwaukee does, because it was Milwaukee without Chris Middleton that had them on the brink of elimination on the road in Game 6. And that is still something in their brains.
Yeah, I'd also be really interested to see how Philly tries to guard a team like Boston in the playoffs with all the depth they have on the wing, especially if they play Brogdon, Tatum, Brown together. I think it's going to be very difficult for a team like Philly. Let's get into the second big national game from last night. You alluded to this. The Warriors and Grizzlies, man, they just play really entertaining games, and somehow there's this discourse. Is it a rivalry? Is it not a rivalry? It's a rivalry, okay? These teams clearly don't like each other. They get up for playing each other. That should be all it takes. Like, we don't need to get into this, but the playoffs and shit, blah, blah, blah. No, no, no. The teams don't like each other. The fans don't like each other. The games are very fun. Another really good one last night. Steph Curry, as you alluded to, getting ejected late. So mad at Jordan Poole for taking an ill-advised three-pointer that he throws his mouth guard. Really encompassing the Jordan Poole experience. Poole later hits the game winner on a nice back cut on Zaire Williams with 2 seconds to go. Really nice play by him. The Warriors get the win. This coming after they also beat Memphis on Christmas Day in Golden State. That game, obviously, without Steph. You know, the Grizzlies were really hot. I think they've now lost a couple in a row. They were really hot after that Christmas Day game. They finally had an extended stretch of good health here. You know, they rest guys here and there, whatever. But Jaren Jackson fouled out last night. He's been healthy. Bane is back, although I think still working his way into form a bit. There was a play last night late in the fourth. I don't know how you feel about Dylan Brooks. I generally really like him, even though he's just so chaotic. But Ja gets a double, kicks it out to Brooks. He takes a three that you really don't want him to take. Golden State ends up winning this game by two. I'm curious, if the playoffs started right now, the Grizzlies would be the two seed. Would you pick the Grizzlies in a playoff series over the Warriors?
No. And I think the Warriors are still a mess. You know, I think they need... And we've talked about this on the crossover. I think they know they need another body. They've got to get somebody for that bench. You know, I'm all for the Jonathan Kuminga can solve all idea, but that feels a little too pie in the sky for me. So they need one more body there. But the Grizzlies, look, last night kind of encapsulated, and even look, they lost on a miracle shot at the end. Mm-hmm. Not a miracle shot per se, but like a last-minute shot, lost by 2 points. So it was close. But last night sort of highlighted some of their problems. The Grizzlies are the number one defensive team in the NBA, but they are middle of the pack at defending the three. And if you look at the numbers, the Warriors shot, 44% from three-point range. They also don't shoot the three particularly well. In this game, they shot 32% rather, from three-point range. They're also a team that, and I think the numbers still reflect this, I was looking it up last week, they don't play in the half court very much. They're a transition team. They get up and down. And look, that's great in the regular season, but you've got to be an efficient half-court team in the playoffs to win at the highest level. And the Warriors know how to do that. The Grizzlies have not proven they can do that yet. So I'm not trying to clown the Grizzlies here, but they've got a couple of holes that I think need to be addressed. And I don't think you need to make a deal necessarily to address that, but you've got to clean some of that up. You've got to become a more efficient three-point shooting team. You got to defend the three-point shot better, and you've got to prove you can be efficient in the half court. These are just kind of unknowns about Memphis against Golden State and everybody else, really, because everybody kind of looks at that one number, defensive efficiency, number one in the NBA. And that's great. Jaren Jackson, one of the best defensive players in this league. But, you know, more often than not, you either have to be a great three-point shooting team or you got to defend the three-pointer really well. And the Grizzlies have been kind of middle of the pack at both those areas all season long.
Yeah, Memphis is obviously fantastic on defense, but they're not the kind of runaway defensive juggernaut that I think you need to be to have their kind of offense and succeed.
No, Boston
in the playoffs
was last year. Boston was a juggernaut defensively.
Boston in the second half of last season was like one of the best teams we've seen
historically
this century.
Good, yeah.
It was, kind of shocking in some ways, like that teams were able to push them in the playoffs and they didn't win the finals. I mean, obviously they had some injury stuff, but they were dominant. Memphis, I do think they need to make a move. Like, you look at, I'm just looking at their top six guys in minutes right now. Morant, Bane, Brooks, Adams, Triple J, Tyus Jones. Love that top six in a playoff series. Trust those guys. Tyus Jones, he's not going to get six-man buzz. Maybe he should. He's fantastic. But then you start to look at Conchar, Aldama, Zaire Williams, Roddy, Laravia. Like, who is going to be their 7-8th guy in a playoff series where it is going to matter to some extent, you know, who those guys are? And I just don't know that I trust any of them. You mentioned their 3-point shooting can be mediocre. There are some nights where they have like 1998 3-point stat lines. It's like 5 of 17. And it's like, what happened here? Like, what basketball are they playing? And, you know, to their credit, they have Ja, who's so good at getting to the rim. They get out in transition. They're really good at that. But it worries me a little bit. Like, you lose a guy, even just like Kyle Anderson, who is a steady vet who has playoff experience. Like, is Conchar going to play in a playoff series? Are we rolling with Conchar? He's not a bad player, but are we trusting him? Are we trusting Aldama? There, in that Christmas Day game, Aldama was just getting bullied by Draymond Green. And this guy, like, Draymond could have like beaten him with a club, and I don't think Aldama was getting a foul call. That was on Christmas. What do you think is going to happen in the playoffs when refs are swallowing the whistles? I'm a little worried about, I mean, they have such an enviable top five, top four. Steven Adams has been so good for them, but I'm just a little worried about some of these role players in a playoff series.
No, I think that's fair. And as I'm making my kind of list of tiers of teams that need to be aggressive about a deal, Memphis is in that top tier. Because you look at the Western Conference and it's open. I mean, the number one seed like 2 months ago was Utah. Like a month before that was the Pelicans. Now you're looking at, you know, Memphis and all the teams that are around them. Denver currently sitting at the top. You know, the field's open right now. And if you're the Grizzlies, you don't want to be one role player short of getting to the finals. Like, that would be a disaster. That's why they, you know, they're a team that internally, they don't like to do anything. They just want to grow internally, keep their draft picks. I understand why they hit on these draft picks. You know, Desmond Bane was an excellent pick. I think Zaire Williamson is going to pan out. Like, all these guys, you know, a lot of these guys can play. So, but if you're Memphis and you've got your own stockpile of draft picks, I think they still have an extra pick. The Warriors pick from, was the Iguodala trade from a couple of years ago? I think they still got one of those. If you've got a cache of picks and you've got some semi-interesting young players, why aren't you calling Danny Ainge in Utah and seeing if you can extract Jordan Clarkson or Malik Beasley or one of these shooters that I was talking about, someone that can be the eighth man in that rotation and be a presence from the outside? That just makes sense. Like, you know, I mean, I get it. Dealing with Danny Ainge is like going to the dentist without Novocaine, but like you've still got to try and pull one of those guys out of there. Maybe you do call Detroit and say, what's it going to take to get Bojan Bogdanovic out of there? Maybe you do call Dallas and see and say, you'll give up a first round pick to get Christian Wood out of there. I mean, like, I think sitting on their hands would be a mistake. I really do, because this is a team that with one more player can at least get to the finals. And once you get there, who knows? You know, who knows what can happen? Who knows what the matchup ultimately looks like? So they're a team, I think, that is at least one to watch and one I think should get aggressive in the next couple of weeks.
Now, this is maybe me getting too hopeful or too caught up in kind of the trade buzz, but you mentioned it. This feels like the most wide-open title race we've had maybe in, I don't even know how long, the longest I can remember, the most kind of wide open title chase we have. There are a few teams that have all their picks. Phoenix is one of them. Memphis is another one. Should someone just give up 3 first round picks for OG Anunoby? Like, I kind of think someone should. And I know that sounds crazy because he's not a Donovan Mitchell type player. He's not a Rudy. I mean, whatever. We don't have to get into the Gobert trade again, but you know, he's not a superstar, but he's just such a high floor player that is going to help you so much in the playoffs. Like, if you traded, again, I like Dylan Brooks. This team's better with Dylan Brooks on the floor. If you traded some of these Dylan Brooks possessions for OG Anunoby possessions, that could make a big difference for Memphis. Like, Phoenix could desperately use someone like him. Is it stupid for a team to pay that price, or is it opportunistic in a wide open season to say, let's just go get this guy?
Now, I think about trades, honestly, like I think about movies, in the sense that, you know, they say about making movies, it's not how much a movie costs, it's how much a movie makes. So it's not how much a trade costs, it's what a trade does for you. And you know, if Memphis goes out, for example, to bring them back into the discussion, if they go out and they deal 3 first round picks to get OG Anunoby, adding that kind of 3-and-D type of player to their mix, who is both young, under contract for, I think, at least one more year, and someone they could re-sign long-term, that might be worth the price, especially when you're probably talking about 3 picks that are going to be in the 20s for the foreseeable future. But you've got to be sure that he's the missing link. And you've also got to call Toronto's bluff a little bit. I mean, 3 firsts is a big haul. It's like you said, that's what Donovan Mitchell cost, plus a player. Rudy Gobert was 4, really 5, because Walker Kessler is really friggin' good, and people missed the boat on him. I don't think you should be worried. If you think Anunoby is the guy, and if you think for the next 5 to 6 years he is going to be a staple of your rotation and you're going to be a really good team, I wouldn't blink at the asking price. But if he's not, that's a steep price to pay for a guy that's probably not ever going to be one of your top 2 guys, definitely. Maybe not one of your top 3 mm-hmm. guys in your rotation.
I'm very interested to see what happens with him. Everyone's talked about Toronto. It's not an original thought. But man, oh man, there's so many teams that you just want to parachute him in on and see how they look. I really kind of hope he gets to go to a contender. Let's talk about the Los Angeles Lakers. Anthony Davis returns last night. I thought it was a very smart move to ease him in a game against the San Antonio Spurs. And he was fantastic. I think he only played, 24 minutes, 21 points, a bunch of blocks. I was working on that Bam Adebayo story earlier this year, and periodically I like to check, which of the players doing the best in the restricted area, non-paint restricted area, the paint. I think Anthony Davis was shooting 78.7% in the restricted area, which is even for the restricted area, absurd. And so it was really nice to watch him last night. He took 1 3. I think a 3 was his first shot, but really get back into the paint a ton. That's where he was having a ton of success to start the season and looking like MVP AD again, just dominating the rim on both ends of the floor. Were you at the game? What did you make of his return?
I was at the game. I thought he was excellent. He moved well. It only took him merely a couple of minutes to kind of get his rhythm back after he got mm-hmm. to the free throw line and that first shot went in. I think he really got into it. He had 2 blocks into the first quarter and really got into the flow. So, look, he's obviously a major difference maker for that team. You can see the way he energizes them, definitely defensively and even offensively, his ability to kind of step out top of the key, make shots, get to the basket, create second chance opportunities, the whole thing. And look, when you have him in the rotation, you can bump Thomas Bryant down. You can bump mm-hmm. Rui Hachimura, the new guy, down. So it's valuable in that sense. My concern, as it will be every game, is that foot going to hold up? And you saw
there was
the third
a scare
quarter.
Last night. Yeah,
he went down the third quarter. I mean, Zach Collins came up underneath him. Why Zach Collins was contesting a 48 footer, I don't really understand. But Zach Collins came underneath him, and immediately Anthony Davis grabbed his ankle. And it's kind of like a writerly phrase to say the entire arena gasped. But I'm telling you, the entire arena gasped as Anthony Davis lay on the floor, and he didn't get up right away. But he did get up. He was fine, but this injury, it was an injury they couldn't really define for weeks, it seemed like, mm-hmm. where, what is it? Does he need another scan? How many doctors are going to look at it? There's a bone spur there. There's a stress reaction there. There's a lot of things that are scary when it comes to big men and feet, which are generally problematic when they get commingled. So, I if he's healthy, and I think Hachimura is really good too, he's a nice fit for that team. They're a team that you have to keep your eye on in the next few months, because healthy AD, healthy LeBron, Hachimura part of the rotation. If Westbrook can limit his off the deep end plays to 2 per game, they're going to be dangerous in the playoffs. But it's game by game with Anthony Davis. He steps on somebody's foot wrong, you're talking about something that may require surgery. I mean, surgery was discussed originally for this. This foot injury. So
it sounds like it's happening in the offseason, no matter what he's even alluded to. We're going to have to get the bone spur cleaned up.
That would scare the crap out of me. If you're like the Lakers and you're looking at free agents, if he has, foot surgeries are they're real. There are major ones, obviously. You don't want to hear Lisfranc. Mm-hmm. That's the new word in the basketball lexicon that is
the new microfracture. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody wants to hear that anymore. Yeah. So, but yeah, I'm just, there's a long way to go in the regular season and a lot of games be played. And I would at the very least be deeply concerned about Davis's ability to stay out there on the floor.
Yeah. It's tough because it's a little bit reductive, not even reductive. Like, it's not fun to reduce the analysis to can he stay on the floor, but that really is what it comes down to with AD. We know how good he is. Yeah. We know how good he is when he plays. He, I think, looks the best since he's left New Orleans this season. That's how good he was playing earlier this year. I like what you said. Like, for them to have a bench backcourt now that's Thomas Bryant and Rui Hachimura is, like, legitimate considering where they were to start the season. I think Dennis Schroeder's been fantastic for the Lakers the last couple weeks. Like, you know, they had that game against Miami a couple weeks ago where they won without LeBron and AD. Schroeder was fantastic in that game. He was making plays late in that Memphis game. Again, last night, like, he's just a very solid player for them. And things are kind of settling into focus, and that's even without Austin Reeves and Lonnie Walker. I think Walker's been better for them than even I expected this year. So they're in position. Like, as much grief as we give Lakers management, which they deserve for not putting a team around LeBron that can compete, to see how close they are with a team like the Warriors, for example, and their ownership group. Like, we had a story this week in The Athletic. They're not sure if Bob Myers is going to be back. And now I'm looking at it like, are the Lakers relatively even that embarrassing when you see what's going on with some of these other teams like Golden State? So I'm pleasantly surprised with where the Lakers have ended up at this point in the season. I think if LeBron and AD stay healthy and they're one more move away, I don't think the Hachimura thing is going to be a big...
I think that move is coming too. Like, mm-hmm. I think... this Hachimura deal foreshadowed at least one more move because the Lakers, their cap space next summer is now gone because you don't, whatever you think of second round picks, you don't trade three of them to get a guy you're not going to re-sign. And without Hachimura, they're at $34 million. That's close to max cap space. With him, even if he's at 10, 12 million, he probably is a little bit more. You're going to eat up half of that. And you're talking about having only enough money to get, what Kelly Olynyk is worth these days, I think because of that reality, I think you're going to see the Lakers far more aggressive in the next couple of weeks, looking at some of the Utah guys, looking at Bojan Bogdanovic. Maybe there's somebody else out there that's available, kind of waving the white flag on the idea that next summer they're going to be able to go and get a marquee free agent like Kyrie Irving to come play in LA. And look, that's, who knows how that's going to work out long term, but short term, that's going to make them even more dangerous. You put Bojan Bogdanovic on that team, they're an even more dangerous offensive team. And you saw LeBron last night. I mean, he's been on these scoring binges of late, but when he's surrounded by guys that can play, like Hachimura and by Anthony Davis, he's passing the ball. He's given out 11 assists in that game. He's not looking to, put up 40 when on any given night. So you give him another weapon, that team's going to be that much better.
It's going to be interesting to see. I think it also opens up, like you said, if they do decide to move Russ and attach those first-round picks, the idea that they can take back longer-term salary really opens up the idea for some of the moves they can make, and I wonder if they'll try to get involved with someone like Van Vliet or whoever it is. It could be really interesting. I want to get to All-Star, but I just want to ask real quick. I really, really enjoyed those Nets-Sixers games and the Warriors-Grizzlies games last night. It was a ton of fun, and we have like Nuggets Sixers coming up on Saturday. We have Lakers Celtics coming up. I'm already willing to call rivalry week a success. If anything, maybe we need to make a bigger deal out of it next year. No. I don't know. No, you're out on it. Come on, Chris.
No, rivalry week is stupid. Just schedule the damn games. Like, stop trying to give greater meaning to meaningless regular season games in January, February. Everybody knows what the NBA needs to do. They need to cut down the number of games. Everybody knows it, but nobody's willing to do it, and nobody ever will, because the revenue takes a cut with it. So they can keep putting lipstick on a pig on these January, February games where you're doing rivalry week when really that's what Christmas is for, right? Like, Christmas Day games are rivalry week games. You're talking about that stupid midseason tournament that's going to have no consequence whatsoever. And you're still dealing with, players being load managed into the ground. Like, it's crazy. And it's having a tangible effect on the quality of these games. I mean, look at just Wednesday night. You should have had a matchup between two former two-time MVPs in Nikola Jokic and Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Denver was on the second end of a back-to-back in that game.
Also, I just want to point out, it was a New Orleans to Milwaukee back-to-back, which you almost never see. And a shout out to all the Nuggets writers who had to get from New Orleans to Milwaukee, which does not have a lot of direct flights. It, one of the strangest back-to-backs I've ever seen. Listen, I did love the games. I'm the kind of person who still gets excited about regular season matchups, and they were a lot of fun to watch. You are right.
I do too, but you don't have to call it rivalry week. Like, what is that? Like, this is a new rivalry between the Grizzlies and the Warriors, that's for sure. But to me, you just do it on Christmas Day. Like, there's nothing the NBA can do. Like, they've done all they can do to make the end of the season consequential by putting the two play-in games, flattening the lottery odds. That was brilliant. That was well done by Adam Silver, well done by the players' union. That gave meaning to what had been just brutally bad games at the end of March and into April. But there is no solution to fixing the problem of January, February games. None whatsoever. You are stuck with games that people aren't going to watch at the level you want them to be watching, and no amount of college slogans and, you know, mid-season tournaments for the Oscar Robertson Award or whatever the hell you're going to call it, like it's just not going to work. There's no solution to this problem other than cutting games, and we all know they're not going to do it.
Basically, I'm a mark for a good marketing scheme. That's what happened. It's okay.
You're watching the games anyway. They're not trying to get you. They're trying to get the casual fan attention. They can't
That's true. I'll see if my mom and dad cared about it at all.
See if they cared about rivalry week. Ask them, what do you think of NBA rivalry week? I'll walk out the front door and ask people the same thing. They will not know.
I will say, I'm with you. It should be a 58-game regular season, one home.
That's too small.
I like
72,
it.
72 is fine. Take 10 away. You eliminate all back-to-backs, so there really is no excuse for load managing.
Yeah.
And by the way, look, games are separated by time zones, of course, but how many times have we had two games on that we wanted to watch, like, live?
Yeah.
All the time it happens. So you space some of these games. Maybe you don't have 10 a night or 12 a night. Maybe you have 7 a night, 8 a night.
Yeah.
You know, but they're not going to do it because nobody's giving any money back. And I understand that. It's money, although
I think it's the Gordon Gekko line.
How many yachts do you want a jet ski behind or whatever that was?
I think the money conversation too is, I think it's a short-term hit for a long-term gain, but no one wants to be the guy taking the short-term hit
for the
league 10 years from now. We're recording this on a Thursday. The All-Star starters are going to be announced tonight, and we each wrote, you have an actual ballot. I just have the fake one that I get to peddle on sportsillustrated.com. But we each made our All-Star picks. You did the Eastern Conference. I did the Western Conference. I want to run through our All-Star picks and talk a little bit about some of the guys. I think it was a robust All-Star field this year. There were some really tough cuts. So why don't you go first, or I have your story pulled up if you want me to run down all your All-Star picks if you don't remember them, but you know, there's definitely a couple, I think, interesting decisions to be made about starters, who's going to be left out, etc. So do you want me to run through your picks, or do you got them pulled up?
You can run through them there.
All right, there we go. Yeah. I got it. All right. Yeah. So in the East front court, there's really four guys for three spots. You have Embiid, Durant, and Tatum. That means you're bringing Giannis off the bench. And in the backcourt, you have Donovan Mitchell and Jaylen Brown. So I guess I'll just throw it to you. You know, I think Tyrese Halliburton is a guy people are looking at as a starter potentially. Obviously, Giannis. What were kind of the deciding factors for you putting Giannis and Tyrese to the bench, elevating guys like Jaylen? And I mean, the front court in the East was just an impossible decision to make.
Yeah, it was impossible. Look, I with Giannis, he's having a monster year statistically. The Bucks are really good. One of the things that stuck out to me when I was looking over some of the numbers is the Raptor ranking for Giannis, which is not the end all be all, but it's 538's kind of value rankings to kind of boil it down. And you had Embiid, Durant, and Tatum in the top five in those Raptor rankings. Giannis was 26th. He was behind Franz Wagner in that rankings. So if you're looking for a differentiator, that was probably it. As I said, I don't have any issue with somebody that puts Giannis on that team. The guy's averaging more than 30 points. He's averaging, 12 rebounds, second in the NBA in rebounding. He's still one of the best defensive players in the league. It's, you know, you're choosing from a bunch of gold bricks out there. So I don't have a problem with it. But those Raptor rankings, you know, when I was going through kind of my numbers, that stuck out to me. Halliburton Brown, kind of the same thing. Like, you know, Halliburton's great. You know, he's the NBA leading assist maker. He's changed the entire dynamic of Indiana. They're an up-tempo team now. Like, they were a crawl-it-up team in the past. Now they're an up-tempo team. Brown, I guess I've just seen a lot of Brown, and I've seen him grow even more this year. Yeah. You know, his numbers are fantastic. His mid-range game is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
His three-point shot last couple of years has not been what it was, I think, 2 years ago, but it's still reasonably consistent. He's still a very good defensive player. I just gave him a slight edge on my ballot for that reason. But again, no qualms with some of the votes Halliburton. The only obvious one was Donovan Mitchell. Like, you know, if you don't vote for Mitchell, you should have your ballot revoked at the top.
Yeah. It's funny about Jaylen Brown. It's because Boston is such a three-point shooting heavy team that you just kind of assume he's a huge part of that attack. But you mentioned the mid-range. Like, he's dominant from that area. I think he's
one of the best in the NBA,
yeah,
top five.
Yeah, maybe the best this year. Or I guess, I mean, Durant's always going to be there, but
and
he's been dominant.
An absurd athlete. Like, you know, when it comes to getting to the rim, finishing, he's as good as it gets. And, when you look at some of the numbers, when Tatum goes out, like, Brown plays like Tatum. Like, he puts up 30-plus. So he's, in a way, subjugating himself. Anyway, to for the betterment of the team. And I think he deserves some credit for that, too. Plus, the Celtics are the number one team in the NBA. And the number one team in the NBA, in my mind, deserves to have a couple of guys on that team.
I agree. I just love the edge Jaylen Brown plays with every night, man. It feels like he really is mean to the other team in a way that I appreciate.
Because Jaylen has been, you know, irritated with me for one reason or the other for the better part of, like, the last 3 years. You know, because he's always in trade rumors. Like, and, you know, if you're someone like me that's on TV all the time and you're asked the question, would you trade Jaylen Brown for Anthony Davis? You will sound like an idiot if you don't say, yes, I would. Same thing this past summer. Would you trade Jaylen Brown for Kevin Durant? Well, quite frankly, I would. And, you know, would I still? I don't know. But it's not like Durant's diminished himself this year. So, like, he just winds up in these trade rumors. And, you know, I can understand him being bothered by it and bothered by the people that are forced to discuss them at length. But it's given him an edge. It's given him a chip. And it's certainly been something, along with the loss in the finals, that's driven him during the course of this year.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the other picks. So obviously, you have Giannis on the bench, Bam, Siakam. You have your backcourt reserves, Halliburton,
like,
and Jimmy Butler.
If I left Bam off, I almost left Bam off. You would have, like, cried if I left Bam off. Like, your Eastern Conference ballot is probably Bam, Tyler Hero, and Jimmy Butler all in the starting lineup.
Don't forget Haywood Highsmith.
Ah, good. Yeah. Can't miss out on him.
It's my wild card pick, Haywood Highsmith. Your backcourt reserves, Halliburton and Jimmy Butler. Your wild cards, Jalen Brunson and Trae Young. Did you give serious consideration to Julius Randle? I mean, the numbers are there.
Yeah.
I think some Knicks fans would say he's having a better season than Bam. I don't think I agree, but
of course you do.
I mean, Bam is still, I think, a top five defender in the NBA, even if he's not getting the DPOY buzz.
His problem was games at one point, right? Like, he'd missed some games.
But
I think he's up to enough games where it doesn't matter, where it's not as consequential.
But who is kind of the toughest guy for you to leave out? And, I mean, even Trae Young, you mentioned this, the team's been disappointing. His shooting's been disappointing. He's come along lately. The numbers are there. Who is kind of the toughest cut for you in the East?
I think there were two. It was Julius Randle, and I really just went with, you know, one of the Knicks. And Randle has had a tremendous bounce back year. His numbers aren't quite what they were 2 years ago, but they're significantly better than last season. He is a driving force for that team. offensively. But Jalen Brunson has come in there and been a breath of fresh air. Like, his numbers are up as well. He's in the mid-20s in scoring. He's playmaking. He's defending better than he has, I think, in years past. And I do think, you know, Randall's success this year, in part, can be attributed to the presence of Jalen Brunson. I think Jalen Brunson being there and taking some of the load off has, you know, allowed Randall to do some of the things that he's doing. So that was a tough call. I knew I was going to go with a Nick in that spot. I just went with the other Nick and not there. For me, it was Trae Young or Kyrie. And like, Trae Young is so bleh this year. Like, it's just like
uninspiring.
Uninspiring. That team stinks. Like, you know, I don't know what the direction is. You know, but Trae is still putting up numbers. He's still like hovering in the neighborhood of 30 points per game, and he's still one of the most dangerous offensive players in the league. So, yeah, I weighed that against Kyrie, who's been great for stretches, but he did have that, you know, beginning of the season that was dysfunctional. The Nets have tailed off with Durant out of the lineup, and that gave Trae Young a slight edge. But neither one of those guys is really inspiring choices for that proverbial final playoff spot. I was just choosing the guy that was a little bit more inspiring, perhaps, than at this stage of the season.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with keeping Kyrie Irving out of the All-Star game this year. I mean, listen, he's quote-unquote stayed out of trouble, however you want to describe it, recently, and he's been playing all right, but I'm okay with Trae Young there, and I'd be okay with Randall there. But there were genuinely, I think, some really tough cuts to make this year. I'll run through my West starters real quick, which I think are fairly straightforward. I had Jokic, LeBron, and Sabonis in my front court. For the backcourt, I went with Steph Curry and Luka Doncic. I think Steph is maybe the quote-unquote controversial pick there.
He was tough.
Yeah, I mean, I'm curious, who did you have on your ballot between, or in the West backcourt? Because I think Luka's got to be a lock.
Yeah, Luka's a lock. Ja Morant was my choice there. And again, winning factors into that as well. I mean, Ja has been as healthy, I think, as Steph this year, and the Grizzlies have been really good. And he's the driving force behind. He's the number one guy on that team. So yeah, that was was close. You know, the tougher one was probably, and I had Sabonis as well in that third forward spot. If Zion had played more games, he, you know, probably would have locked that in because his team was winning and he was putting up incredible numbers, but he's missed too much time and the Pelicans have kind of fallen off. Sabonis, I think he's probably gonna have the worst numbers of anybody like in the All-Star game. He's under 20 points per game, but he's a playmaker, he's a rebounder, and he's a big reason Sacramento is the most surprising team in the NBA right now. He'll probably be the last guy picked when it comes to selecting these guys, because I don't know if if rebounding and, you know, elbow playmaking is valued in the All-Star game, but he deserves to me. I think he deserved that starting spot.
I agree. Cleaning the glass has Sacramento with the 122.3 offensive rating with Sabonis on the floor, one of the best offenses ever. 58 win pace with him on the floor. He's been fantastic.
Yeah. Playing through a broken thumb.
Guy's playing through a broken thumb right now.
And he's doing that because if he goes out and has surgeries or has to sit out, it's like 3 to 6 weeks, and that could cost him positioning. The friggin' guy's playing with a broken thumb.
Yeah, he's been truly fantastic in that third all-NBA spot for center after Embiid and Jokic. It's Sabonis, AD, and Bam. It's going to be fascinating to see what happens there. I went with Steph in my piece only because his numbers are just so close to his MVP, 2016 MVP season, that I'm like, what are we doing? Like, I got to put him in, but I think, you know, Ja, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they were all good picks there. The front court reserves, I think this is also where it gets interesting because I have Lauri Markkanen, who I think has been fantastic. The game's in Utah. I'm okay with putting him in there. He has the numbers, 25-9-2. I went with Zion and AD also. People are, going to make injury arguments for them, but I feel like they've just been so good when they're on the floor that you can't leave them out.
You can't. I don't know how you can put AD in there. Like, I didn't fill out a full ballot, obviously, for the coaches pick the reserves, but AD's been out since December 16th, man. Like,
yeah,
that's a long time.
He's going to play. You know, now he's back. He's going to play the next couple weeks headed in. I'm with you. Like, it's just, you know, but then it's like, who do you want there in the front court? Because I wouldn't say it gets bleak, but it weirdly gets like, I'll get to Aaron Gordon in a second. You know, my backcourt reserve is pretty obvious, John Shea. Let me put it this way. For my wild cards, I went with Dame and Aaron Gordon. I mean, I think Devin Booker has a great case. Paul George has a good case. Lillard just had the most efficient 60-point game ever. I know the Blazers have been sliding the last few weeks, but I think Damian's been fantastic. Okay, so I'm in the locker room, the Nuggets locker room at Staples Center a couple weeks ago, chatting with Aaron Gordon, talking about his All-Star case. And the conversation's wrapping up, and I'm just kind of, just as a throwaway, I'm like, do people still come up to you about your dunk contest? He's like, yeah, it's really annoying. And I was like, so you wish they'd stop? And he's like, yes, I wish people would stop bringing it up. Unprompted, he just goes, if I'm in the All-Star game, I'll do the dunk contest. And I was like, are you serious? He's like, yeah. And I was like, you know, people are going to run crazy with this quote, right? And he's just like, yeah, doubles down on it. And I was like, that for me, frankly, enough. I'm like, if that's what it takes to get Aaron Gordon in the dunk contest, let's do the right thing and put him in the All-Star game. You mentioned that Boston has two guys. Denver's now separated themselves a little bit in the West. They're in the number one seed. I'm okay with them getting two guys, but the problem with the West is so many of the top guys. I mentioned PG, Book, AD. A lot of injuries make it kind of a weird situation on who to put in.
Yeah, I wouldn't put AD in. I mean, he's great, but it's been over a month, like a month and a half since he's been out. Like, right. That's just too much.
It's like Jaren Jackson Jr. probably?
My front court would probably be Markkanen, I think, belongs in there. I would put Zion in there. And I would put Aaron Gordon in there. I mean, yeah, look, I saw Denver the other night, too. We were both at Staples and talking to some of their front office guys, like, you know, they can't rave enough about his impact defensively. Like, this is the player, everything they hope they acquired from Orlando a couple of years ago, this is the guy. So I would give him that slot. And if he's going to dunk, great. Although I think the dunk contest has become stupid. I don't even watch it anymore. You know, Shea Gildas-Alexander has to be an all-star. That's a mortal lock. The guy's like effortlessly putting up 30 and a half these days. Like it's unbelievable. So I'd put him on that list. You know, I guess Lillard for sure. You know, you saw him put up 60 on Wednesday night. You know, that's ridiculous. Does De'Aaron Fox make it? Like
that was the toughest cut for me. And I wonder,
Booker's been out too long.
Yeah.
Like McCollum is, I think, a legitimate candidate there because of his impact. I'm not giving it to Anthony Edwards because Minnesota stinks. Jaren Jackson Jr. Paul George never plays. Kawhi never plays. You know, Jeremy Grant. No, that's, to me, it's like, you know, Fox and McCollum are kind of that last spot. And, you know, I go either way.
Yeah.
De'Aaron Fox had such a good bounce back year from last year. McCollum's such a big impact, especially with Brandon Ingram being out for as long as he was.
Right.
You know, it's a coin flip to me.
Fox was definitely the toughest cut for me. I do think the Kings have been an incredibly charming story, and I'm not trying to denigrate it in any way. Do they need two All-Stars? I don't know that I need them to have two All-Stars as exciting as they've been. It's also Brandon Ingram. My brother keeps texting me about like Zion and being like, are the Pelicans going to regret this? Is he always going to be hurt? Like, he's played more than Brandon Ingram this season. Before we get out of here, I want to ask, what do you think about the NBA finally moving the draft to right before the game? I'm again, another thing I'm very excited about.
It's good. It makes things a little more interesting. Although, like, you're talking to the wrong crowd here. Like, I'm not even staying for the game on Sunday. Like, I'm getting in Thursday. I'm going to talk to who I need to talk to. I'm going to see who I need to see. I'll go to the availabilities to work on some things I'm working on. And then Sunday morning, goodbye. I'll see you later. I don't need to sit in the upper, you know, levels of the newly renamed Delta Center to watch an All-Star game. I'm good. I mean, for fans, look, it's great watching guys pick their teams, you know, right there. It's fun. I think the NBA's done a nice job in, you know, using gimmicks to make things a little more fun, but I don't care. I Like All-Star to me is a nice break. Like give me a little bit of a break before the real games pick up again.
Yeah, all fair points. My only addition would be it needs to be a snake draft. That's why LeBron's teams win every year, because he gets the first pick. Everyone's playing fantasy sports all the time, etc. It's got to be a snake draft. Chris, I don't know if you want to text that to Adam Silver right now, but just let him know.
Actually, there we go. Thank you. Immediately that it should be a snake draft. And
this legitimately bothers me because people love to run with on the internet. It's like LeBron is 6-0 as an all-star captain. And I'm like, make it a damn snake draft. It's too easy for him.
I don't think the selection of the players has anything to do with the outcome of the game. I don't. I think it's like who cares the most and who went out in Park City the night before. Like that is you are way overthinking the All-Star game, my man.
I know. I really am. But I do think this one, if we're talking
the only adjustment I would make, and I've said this for years now, is eliminate the skills competition and make a King of the Court tournament. Because if you like, I think NBA players, top NBA players, would love the distinction of being known as the best one-on-one player in the NBA. It is a one-on-one league now. So if you make a one-on-one tournament, I think you will get more stars than you will get for skills, certainly more stars than the dunk contest. And I think you will create better television on Saturday night.
That's very interesting, and I wonder if the players would go for it because there's like an embarrassment factor, but it's high risk, high reward. I mean, the idea of literally let's get 10 all-stars lined up on the court, and it's like they're waiting to come in.
The Allen Iverson Trophy.
All right. I'm liking what you're putting down here, Chris. Well, that will do it for this episode of Open Floor. Chris, I'm sure we're looking forward to hearing about your party stories from Park City. We'll have to check in on that crossover episode.
Good to be back. Good to be back. It's like Paul Pierce signing a one-day contract with Boston. Good to be back in the franchise that I founded right here.
There you go. The house that Chris Mannix built. That'll do it for today's episode. Please keep your emails coming. openfloormail@gmail.com. Until next week, continue to enjoy the NBA season. Whoa.
Are you struggling with weight loss? Scared of getting the shot? Golo is a better way to lose weight. No prescriptions or insurance required. Just take one Release supplement with each meal and follow the Golo for Life plan. Golo's Release contains 7 natural plants and 3 key minerals to target body fat and combat the stress of dieting. Golo is clinically proven to work and safely and effectively controls sugar cravings and hunger while minimizing muscle loss, so you feel good and inspired to reach your goal weight. Stop going with the latest fad starvation diet. Stop depleting yourself and robbing your body of energy. Start living your best life today. Golo is effective and affordable, so before you consider drastic measures like the fad diets and new weight loss injections with potentially dangerous side effects, including significant muscle loss, learn more about Golo at Golo.com. Again, that's Golo.com. Join the 5 million who have already made the switch to Golo today. Visit Golo.com. That's Golo.com.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month?
They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster.
That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.